Hi everyone, I'm John Offit. I'm a broadcaster based in the UK and welcome to Different Minds, a podcast series that looks at neurodiversity, the different ways our brains can work and interpret information. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Teemo, the award-winning visual planning app designed to support routine and time management. The app empowers users to schedule visual routines that work. Users say that Teemo can actually help reduce stress and support executive function. Head to your app store and type T-I-I-M-O into the search bar to learn more. I'm delighted to be joined by Adam Harris this Autism Awareness Month. Adam is an Irish autistic activist, speaker, member of Autism Europe, and the founder and CEO of Autism Acceptance Group, As I Am. Adam was diagnosed with Asperger's Syndrome age 5 and founded As I Am based on his experiences living with autism. Adam, welcome to Different Minds.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
How are you? How has 2021 been for you so far?
I think it's just about the same as everybody else. I'm a little bit fed up at this stage. We've been incredibly busy, and obviously that's a bad thing on one hand, because it's a real sign that the autism community is really struggling. So emails and queries to our service are up 280% on the same time last year. So that just shows, I think, the impact COVID-19 is having and the work that we all have to put into to help our community through this. At the same time, I'm very grateful to be busy, because I think if you didn't have work at the moment, it would just be even harder.
Absolutely. No, I can definitely relate to that. So can you just tell us a bit about As I Am? So what does it do?
Yeah, so As I Am is an organization that I set up when I was doing my final exams in school. And one of the reasons I set it up is I really felt there was a need to change public attitudes towards autism in Ireland. You know, we've been on a journey, if you like, of awareness over the last 20 years that has been successful insofar as we've seen, for example, within schools now, high levels of participation by the autism community. We've seen a massive increase in diagnosis. However, what I felt was that's not going far enough. And, you know, I was somebody who started my experience, my life journey, if you like, in special school and then moved to mainstream school. But as a teenager, I hated anyone knowing that I was autistic, because I felt they would treat me totally differently if they knew that. So I really feel we needed to get beyond awareness towards true understanding and acceptance. So As I Am wants to create an autism-friendly society here in Ireland. And we do that in two ways. We work directly with the autism community in terms of capacity building, answering queries, advocating on behalf of the community. But then what we also do is we predominantly address autism as an accessibility issue. So we believe to achieve true inclusion, it's society which must change and become adaptable to the needs of autistic people, who have to adapt every day anyway. So we've been doing a range of projects across Irish society to try and bring this about. So that's everything from supporting the development of an autism-friendly university award, the first such accreditation in the world, through to work to developing a program for towns in Ireland to become autism friendly, and an awful lot in between.
And again, you are a member of Autism Europe. Can you just tell us a little bit about that organization?
Yeah, well, as Ireland's autism charity, As I Am is delighted to be affiliated with Autism Europe as a full member. And I sit on the board of directors of Autism Europe. And obviously, on big issues, it's so important that we cooperate across borders within Europe. So what Autism Europe aims to do is really create a space for us to share learnings. It's been very helpful during COVID when we've been trying to understand, you know, how are schools managing in other jurisdictions, what supports are in place in other European countries. And then also advocates at a European Union level for appropriate supports and investment for autism. So it's an important organization, and one that we're very proud to be associated with.
You have a video on YouTube where you describe what it's like to be in a world that isn't built for you, and you describe essentially the metaphor of being an alien. I wonder if you could just talk us through what you mean by that.
Yeah, you know, I've always liked that idea that being autistic wasn't a right or wrong way of thinking, rather it was living in a world where the vast majority of people don't think like you, don't communicate like you. And, you know, initially when I would have started my advocacy, I think the video you're referring to is from like 2015, I would use that analogy of, you know, being blasted into a different planet. I think what I've learned is that that's actually even too extreme an idea, because what I much prefer is, when we're talking about autism, to see it as a form of diversity within society, not as something that requires charity, not as something that requires pity, but rather as a fundamental part of the makeup of our society. And, you know, to try and help people who don't understand autism, I think is always challenging, who haven't that lived experience, because, you know, I think we often bamboozle people with facts and figures and stats, but I think that the gap is often empathy. If you can't step into the shoes of somebody, how can you support them and how can you see the world from our point of view? So how I try and explain autism to people actually today is culture. So we know all around the world, there's people who use different languages to the one you and I use, who day-to-day life is structured in a very different way to maybe ours is, who even the physical environment that they live in is totally different to you or I. And we don't think usually that this is right or wrong. We just recognize it as difference. And every culture has positives and negatives, things that are really strong and things that are really challenging about it. So what I often do now when I talk to people about autism is ask them to imagine what it would be like to be picked up and dropped into, for example, somewhere like a subway station in Tokyo, where it's so busy that they actually have staff members whose job it is to push you onto the train until the doors close. And imagine being cramped in like sardines in a train like that. Imagine the amount of people in your personal space speaking at once. You can't hear yourself think. Maybe the person pushed up against one shoulder had garlic for their dinner the night before. It's awful. Maybe another person is wearing really strong perfume and you just cannot wait to get off the train. The train pulls in and the doors open and everyone else is on autopilot. They know exactly where they're going, but you've no idea. Where am I going or how do I get there? Maybe you speak a bit of Japanese, but it might seem like the other people who you ask directions for are speaking very quickly. Maybe in different cultures, body language and facial expression work differently. So you're finding it hard to be understood. So you have to try and work it out for yourself. So maybe you look around and see, is there any signage I can follow? And maybe you follow some signage and you're feeling a little bit more relaxed. But if you get to the exit and the last sign is missing, you're going to go back to square one, because things that are obvious to other people won't be obvious to you. And the reason I like to explain autism in that way is, as I said, it's not right or wrong. It's different. But if you think about that example, all of the key accessibility barriers autistic people face are captured: communication, predictability, sensory processing, judgment and attitude. But it's just a very extreme example that people can relate to. But what I think most people, you know, who've grown up in Ireland or England would find hard to understand is that for an autistic person living in Ireland, getting on a bus and going to a job interview might be as much of a culture shock to that person as literally the analogy I just used would be for you. Yeah. But even though it's I guess, quite an overwhelming idea being thrown into that situation, most of us would still like to go to Tokyo. We just like to be prepared. We just maybe would decide not to use the train. We'd take a taxi. We'd want to have a map. And in the same way, autistic people can and want to do the same things as other people. But whether we're met halfway or not is the difference between a person being included and accepted in their community or being isolated and left behind.
So what role do you think media has to play in kind of dispelling some of the myths and I guess stereotypes around autism? Because obviously, as you say, we need to understand autism better as a society, but I guess often when you look at the media, I mean, it's definitely getting better, but often, you know, you do see all the stereotypes of what it means to be autistic.
Yeah, like there's a few things I'd say on this. I think representation is really important. So I want to see more autistic people represented really across sectors in society, because representation, I think, is how we will change things. So I think that's vital, and particularly for public sector broadcasters. If 1 or 2% of the population is autistic, they should be striving to have 1 or 2% of their staff to be on the autism spectrum. I think as well, though, the other two areas that I think are very important are training for journalists. I've often experienced in my own advocacy work, weeks and months of work putting together some event or campaign can be spoiled by a really well-meaning journalist, you know, coming along, probably running to 3 other events after they cover your event, and just in writing up the article, using the wrong word, framing autism in the wrong way, saying words like suffer, disorder, treatment, and really medicalizing and undoing all the work you're trying to do. So I'd love to see journalists have access to training to understand autism and portray it in a more respectful way, as they might with other minorities. Yeah. But I think the other thing that I think is important is in terms of popular culture. I think what's really important in that respect is where we need to get to. It's not just about that when an autistic character is portrayed, that's done accurately. I think what it's actually about is we want to get beyond that somebody's in a play or a movie or a TV show because they're autistic. But instead, what I want is the next time I watch, I don't know, a soap opera, I want the person who's the bank manager to happen to be autistic, the person who's the local publican to happen to be autistic, so that it's just actually part of society as opposed to something that drives the plot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess there's still a way to go, because obviously we had that film recently with Sia, you know, where Sia worked with Autism Speaks in America, and there was a big backlash against the kind of research that she did around that film. And often in popular culture, you know, that they are still getting that representation wrong after all these years.
And I think, you know, part of the problem on this as well is that, you know, I've seen the film and it's not good. And I mean, when I think Sia said that she wanted the film to be a love letter for the autism community,
yeah.
But it's writing that love letter, she didn't actually speak to the lover, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem, that so many people still think they can portray autism accurately without involving autistic people and listening to autistic people. And I think that's the dialogue that we really need to try and develop within society.
So you mentioned about kind of the importance of language that journalists use, and but I guess even in mainstream society, we are still using words like high and low functioning labels, which you could say are harmful to autistic individuals.
Yes, I think so. You know, I'm very involved in particular in education advocacy here in Ireland, and we still have, you know, even the term autism spectrum disorder being used by an education system that in the next breath will be talking about the importance of supporting young people with self-esteem who are autistic. Our autism classes, so classes that are in mainstream school but have additional supports for autistic students, are often referred to as units. And obviously that doesn't really facilitate integration in the school. So I think there's a big, big problem still in how we talk about autism in a very medical way. And that, of course, then informs public policy as well. I mean, one of the things that I think sometimes it feels is we're like trapped between two extremes, because there's sometimes a tendency in public policy to nearly downplay people's genuine support needs in order to avoid providing support. And on the other hand, to access any support at all, there's a need for families or for autistic people to really portray themselves and their experiences in the starkest possible light in order to get any support. And I mean, that's not a progressive or an empowering approach.
And also, I guess there's a paradigm shift when it comes to the language that we use around autism. Some people identify as neurodivergent, as some as neurominorities, some as autistic. So I guess sometimes there is you could say a little bit of confusion about the appropriate language to use.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's an ongoing discussion. I think language always changes. I've always been someone, well, I think it's really important we get the language right, that I try and do the piece where I listen for intention as well, because I think that, you know, it's really important that as our language evolves, that we don't make people feel unsafe to have the sort of discussions we need to have to advance autism equality. So when I have a conversation, I want to educate people about the right language, but at the same time, not give out if people get it wrong, but rather see, well, what are people's intentions? What are they trying to communicate? And, you know, are they trying to advance equality?
So I just wondered, what else do you think we still need to do as a society to kind of understand each other better, Adam?
I think it's about building a bridge of understanding. I think it's about us really trying to make sure that people have access to the knowledge and information that they need. You know, from our research, what we would find is that the vast majority of people in the public feel well disposed towards autistic people, want to do the right thing. But there's a massive gap between that and knowing what the right thing is. And often that's where a lot of the problems set in. Certainly here in Ireland, what I would have found is that we mainstreamed people into our community, the autism community, but we didn't, if you like, educate society as to how to meaningfully include autistic people. So even though, for example, 86% of children on the autism spectrum now attend mainstream school, most of their teachers have no training in autism. Most of their peers have never had a lesson about what autism is and how you can be inclusive. So we stigmatize by not talking and by not normalizing and just accepting things as part of diversity. So I think it's very, very important that we have a much bigger drive to really create true understanding of autism and to give every sector of society the relevant training it needs in order to facilitate inclusion. I think the other area is we need to start taking autism accessibility as seriously as we take physical accessibility. You know, there's a reality that, you know, even today public buildings are built in a way that is totally overwhelming for autistic people in terms of color, in terms of noise levels, in terms of layout and design. So I think we really need to hear society recognize that the experiences of autistic people are fundamental and need to actually be planned for from an equality point of view. We need to push autism beyond the school gate. So, you know, we're seeing the first generation of autistic young people diagnosed in large numbers as children aging out of school. And our community is looking for work. Our community is coming into contact with law enforcement. Our community wants to be able to become part of, you know, public life. So I think there's a real need to make sure that people have the access, that we're not just talking about children when we talk about autism, and rather that an emphasis is actually placed on making sure that you're an adult for not longer than you're a child. So is society truly accessible for you when you become an adult? I think it's important. And certainly in the work that we would do as part of that discussion, we don't hear enough from the minorities within the minority. So, you know, autistic women, autistic people who are also members of the LGBT community, autistic people who are also part of ethnic minorities, such as the traveller community here in Ireland. So I think there's a lot of work to be done to help the public understand and indeed invest in that broader experience of autism.
I wondered if you could just explain a bit about Asperger's. So obviously, I think you mentioned online that it was an invisible condition, essentially, and that, you know, often people wouldn't realise that you've been diagnosed with Asperger's. Is that the case?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't use the term Asperger's anymore. You know, when I was growing up, the term would have always been Asperger's. And I knew that was in the context of autism, but Definitely the term at home would have been Asperger's. I think it's really welcome that we now talk about autism as a broader community of people, because I don't believe that autism is linear. I believe that everyone's experience is different. And certainly, I think in the past, what used to happen was if somebody was, you know, very independent or able to cope in a world that could be very overwhelming, people would simply say, oh, so they don't need any help. If anything, they probably have special abilities. Mm. And then on the other side of things, that if there was somebody maybe who had a more high support needs presentation of autism, where maybe, for example, the person didn't use language to communicate, people would straight away make assumptions that there was lots of things that person couldn't do, and patronize, and if you like, put a glass ceiling above the person. Mm-hmm. So I think that idea of a spectrum is much healthier. Definitely when I was growing up, when my mom would have been telling people about Asperger's, there was a much lower level of awareness than there is now. I think that awareness has changed, but I think people still have very stereotypical images of what autism should be in their head. And I see that in workplaces now. You know, we visit a lot of big corporates in Dublin where they're employing several thousand people and they don't necessarily think that they have an autistic member of staff, but just statistically it's very, very likely that they do. So I think people often don't realize that just because somebody is able to mask their experiences, just because a person has been able to create coping mechanisms, doesn't mean that they can't be part of the autism community and face challenges as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you do a lot of work to dispel some of the myths around autism. So what do you do as an organization to kind of focus on some of the positives around autism?
Yeah, well, I think the greatest way that we can do that is by employing autistic people, because I think that's a demonstration of how we see the abilities and strengths of the autism community. As I said, for us, it's key about presenting autism as a difference, because I think then that changes the narrative and helps people see it not just immediately as a list of deficits. One of the things we do is we bring an experience around the country, obviously not during COVID times, but it actually helps a person experience what it's like to be autistic, and that opens up a dialogue and a discussion. And we do a lot of work at present with workplaces. We actually are just, for World Autism Month, about to launch a survey on the experiences of employers of autism, because what we believe is that autistic people, when we take a strengths-based approach and focus on the areas of interest in particular, that autistic people can make a massive contribution. And I think we need to dispel the myth that doesn't mean that every autistic person is going to work in a tech company. It might mean that there's an autistic person whose special interest is clothing. It might mean there's an autistic person whose special interest is cinema. But I think whatever that interest is, there's so much positivity to be drawn from using that as a strength for a person to make friends, for a person to become part of their community, and for a person to obtain employment. Autistic people want to make a contribution, and we just need society to find ways to enable us to do that. certainly I know from my point of view, it's always been my interests that ultimately were what helped me to make friends and indeed to secure the employment that I have today.
So what are some of the positives then, Adam, that autistic people have?
So I think there's a range. Like I think first and foremost, this ability to this idea of, I believe that every negative that people like to portray of autism can just as easily be put in a positive light, and it's all to do with where you're standing. So to take, for example, many other people say autistic people are naive. I say autistic people are trusting. Many people say that autistic people are very black and white. I say autistic people are consistent. Many people say that, you know, autistic people can see the bigger picture. I say autistic people can notice detail. People say a person really struggles with this or is obsessed with that. But really what we're talking about there is scattered skill sets. So that if we look at where the area where a person has strengths, it's likely they're really strong in those areas. And how can we use that to help the person, but also to help our community and a society as a whole? So special interest and that ability to really focus on things that we're interested in. They're just some. And of course, autistic people are people, and like everything, we've positive character attributes that go beyond that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Often we expect the autistic person to make adjustments to fit into a neurotypical world, and we want to create a society where it's more about mutual understanding. It's not always the autistic person that misunderstands something. So you mentioned that times are changing, and I guess things are getting better. So what would you like to see in terms of where Ireland is in 10, 15 years' times in terms of understanding around autism?
What I would like to, there's different things that I would like to see. I would like to see a society where being autistic doesn't necessarily mean that you have to suffer. I think that's first and foremost that I'd like to see. I think the experience, the vast majority of autistic people is not because they're autistic, but because of how society responds, that suffering is par for the course. You know, really from a very young age, autistic people are used to being told, no, no, you can't get the supports you need. There's a waiting list. No, you can't be friends with me. No, you can't get a job. We need to turn those no's into yeses so that autistic people might have a different experience or a different outlook on life, but it doesn't mean that leads to suffering or isolation or exclusion from society. So I would like us to work towards making Ireland the world's most autism-friendly country. I genuinely believe that's possible from a community point of view, because we're very strong communities and we just need to get the knowledge where it's needed. But where we've a long way to go is, as with many social issues, I think the community is very ahead of the government on this, and a long period of not investing properly and not protecting the rights of autistic people has created massive challenges, and we really need to see a paradigm shift there.
And the final question, Adam, and this is a question that I asked all my guests in the Different Minds podcast series. So if you had the chance, what advice would you give your younger self?
Don't try and be somebody that you're not. So definitely when I was brought up in a home where autism was spoken about very positively, from a very young age, I remember my parents saying to me, like, you know the way you hate busy places, but you know all the flags of the world, that's Asperger's. So it was always portrayed in this kind of positive difference. But as I said, as a teen, I really felt that gap open up. And I, like any teenager, just wanted to be somebody else, wanted to be the same as everybody else. So rather than even taking the support that was open to me, I put massive pressure on myself. So I would give advice to myself to not be afraid to do things differently, to get to where you need to get to, and to not try and be the same as everybody else, because nobody is the same. And I suppose what I would also kind of say is I would hope that the work that we're doing would help make that possible for people who are maybe 10 or 11 or 12 today.
Adam, it's been a pleasure speaking to you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, John.